Welcome to another Kickstarter special edition of Between the Bubbles. Today we have another two interviews from two really interesting creators of some great Kickstarter projects. So check them out, and if they seem like they'd be worth your while, definitely throw some money their way. We really like them, and we're glad we can support them, and we hope that you can too.
Welcome to another interview of a Kickstarter project. My name is Darren, and here we are at Between the Bubbles. And here with us, we have a great writer, Chris Welsh. Chris, how you doing?
I'm doing great.
Awesome, awesome. Now, Chris has working on a project, was actually a novel, and as we've said on Twitter, here at Between the Bubbles, when it comes to Kickstarter projects, we really want to try and promote all types of art form. We're not just limited to comic books, even though as I found out, actually talking to Chris, he has worked on some comics a little bit, so very interested to hear more about that. But Chris's book, it's called Clutch, a novel of the wrecked Earth. It sounds really, really interesting and fascinating. It's a mixture of Mad Max meets Conan in a future dystopian world. And I've seen the trailer. I've read some of the plot points. It's very, very great. Definitely something that all of you listeners should definitely check out and definitely support. But first, let's get to know Chris, the writer, real quick, as we feel that the more that you listeners get to know the background of the creators, the projects that we interview, the more that you can relate to them and get behind the great work that they're doing. So, Chris, real quick, tell us a little bit about yourself. Where are you from?
Well, I'm in Texas now, but originally I'm from all over the place. My dad was in the Army, so I grew up with a military family, and we lived in a bunch of different states from coast to coast, really.
Really? Have you ever made it out to California area?
Well, no, actually, we skipped over that coast and went out to Hawaii.
Hawaii? Now, were you actually old enough to remember Hawaii, or was that when you're just a little toddler?
Actually, it was. We lived there twice, and both times I was too young to really appreciate it.
Chris, that is way too bad. I've actually been fortunate enough to go to Maui, and oh my, it is beautiful. It is amazing, and if you can, you really have to go back there. Hopefully this project takes off so much that you can, get yourself a little present to go out
there. That'll be a stretch reward for the Kickstarter.
Add that to the little thing. Yeah, it's a cool state. Now, have your military background, or moving around a lot? Because I've heard it's hard to always go to a new school, and it's hard to kind of keep a core group of friends. Did you notice that? Or did you turn to books as a result, or?
Yeah, absolutely. The there's some advantages to being from a military family with all the moving around. You become very adaptable. You learn to sort of get the lay of the land pretty quickly and figure out where you fit in. But books were something that I could always turn to, regardless of how well it was turning out in my new home, to really escape into and enjoy.
Really? So, quick question. What are your favorite genres in novels? Because there's so many.
Yeah, and I'm one of those really annoying people that when you ask me what my favorite color is, I'll tell you, it depends, really.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
And, so, I actually like a lot of different genres. My favorite genres that I lean towards would probably be in the fantasy area, science fiction, Lovecraftian horror. But anything that has a compelling story and a really great characters and a unique plot that'll hook me regardless of the genre.
Yeah, is there certain writers that you really gravitate towards?
Well, Tolkien set the standard for me.
Yes, he did. Hobbit is amazing, which I cannot wait for the movie to come out.
I'm very, very excited about that.
Now, how do you feel about being a trilogy now instead of, just two movies?
I trust Peter Jackson.
Yeah, how could you not?
Yeah, after him and Boyens and Walsh, the screenwriters, mm-hmm. they did such a fantastic job with The Lord of the Rings that I trust them. I know they're going to do a good job, so I'm actually glad.
Yeah, and you know, I don't know if you liked the King Kong movie that they did, but that to me was another just it was amazing project that showed that Lord of the Rings wasn't just and I know he's done movies before, but it wasn't just something that he I don't know like a one hit solo or yeah. you know one hit wonder even though they're three different movies, but it was one big project.
Yeah, and exactly.
It made me realize that he puts his heart and soul into everything he does. So at first I was hesitant, but I'm not. You know, it's Peter Jackson. There should be nothing to fear.
Exactly, so. I've been stoked by all the pictures of the dwarves and everything coming out. So I'm really thrilled.
The trailer, some people didn't like the trailer. I actually loved it. I thought it was just set the real right tone for.
Yeah.
And the guy, I don't know the guy's name who's playing Bilbo Baggins, but I've seen him in the BB show Sherlock. He's Watson,
yep.
And
yep.
He is another just dynamite actor. And I was really excited to see him casted as Bilbo because I think he'll be great.
I agree. Yeah.
So anyway, so quick question then: did your love of books? I'm guessing that it did actually get you then to want to be a writer yourself.
Yeah, actually. So it started with my journey into fantasy started with C.S. Lewis and the Chronicles of Narnia.
Yeah, those. I might be blasphemous in saying this, but I actually like those more than Lord of the Rings when it comes to the novels.
Wow.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah.
Blasphemous here. I know I'm blasphemous here. I just but really liked them.
And you probably read them really young, so.
No, I actually read them as I read them. I didn't read Lord of the Rings till I was an adult because of the movies, and I didn't read Narnia because The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe came out. So I'm like, well, I should read Narnia too. And I don't know. I really liked C.S. Lewis's writing style more than Tolkien's, even though I like the world of Tolkien a lot more because it's just so big. But I know I'm totally blasphemous here. And
you know, I can get that though because Tolkien is dry in a lot of what he writes. He's so in the poetic, epic poem mindset that it can get overwhelming and sometimes you feel like you have to slog through some of it. But
yeah, Tom Bombadil, man, oh my goodness!
Exactly.
So glad they didn't put him in the movie.
Yeah. So then when So I read The Hobbit when I was probably around 8, and then when I was 9, I came across The Lord of the Rings. I didn't know there was something else after The Hobbit,
oh,
and
really?
I remember everything about that moment, the picking up the book and just being in awe of it. And it was The Two Towers. It was the middle book. They didn't have The Fellowship of the Rings. It was checked out. So I grabbed The Two Towers.
That was the first one you read.
Yeah, so I started with the second book. And I didn't know anything about the characters or anything else, but the opening scene where Aragorn's running up the hill when the – I hope there's no spoilers here for anybody. But
if they haven't read or seen the movies, then that's your own fault. I'm sorry.
Right.
You're behind the times.
But it was when the Fellowship broke up, and there was just so much drama going on, and it was opening with a character having to make a really important decision. And he was sort of damned if you do, damned if you don't. And it hooked me immediately. And by the time I finished, I checked out the first book and I reread all three of them. And it was at that point that I knew I was going to be a writer.
Really?
Yeah.
So that young of age?
Yep, definitely.
Wow. Now, just to segue into Clutch then, have some of these books influenced Clutch a little bit? Or are they completely separate?
You know, it everything is influenced it in terms of my writing style because I discovered something in writing this book. I'd started a few novels before. I'd written a novella. I'd written some short stories, and I'd started some novels. But in terms of novel writing, I'm brand new. This is my first one.
Yeah, because you were telling me before you actually worked on some comic books.
Yeah, yeah. I'd actually done. I'd had some comics published through. Or graphic novels through Campfire Comics.
Wow, what were those about, if you don't mind me asking?
Not at all. Campfire is a company in India, and they decided they wanted to get in. They were already a publishing company. There was a different name of the company. I don't remember what it is off the top of my head. But they wanted to get into the sort of school-aged graphic novel market. So they started with a lot of public domain stories, like King Solomon's Mines.
Oh, yeah, okay.
And so they wanted to hire some Western writers to write comic adaptations. So that was the first one I did for them, was the adaptation of King Solomon's Mines. And then they also asked for us to pitch them ideas. So I ended up doing a total of 6 scripts. 4 of them were published. King Solomon's Mines, I did the adaptation of Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde. And then I did our 2 originals, one on the space race, and then one on Harry Houdini. It was a biographical.
Really? Harry? I have a brother who was a magician growing up, and he worshipped Harry Houdini. In fact, he would lock me in boxes and do... I know Harry Houdini was an escape artist, but he would practice and stuff on us. And so it's kind of fun, but...
I've got a couple of... actually, my novella, Coffeeville, is a Harry Houdini short novel.
Really?
Yeah, so I'll send you the link. You can send.
Yeah, that'd be great.
Yeah.
Oh, so then writing a comic book as compared to a novel, are there differences or is it pretty much the same?
No, it's very different. When you're doing a comic, you're writing to your team, really. You're writing to the artist and the editor. It doesn't mean you can't be creative and use colorful language, and you actually want to be as detailed and draw as accurate a picture as you can with words to the artist. But you have a lot more constraints because you have the page you have to consider. How many panels are on the page? How many words can fit in each panel? And that sort of thing. So it does take a different approach. And just depending on really the subject matter, writing a comic, say a 22-page comic, isn't going to take as long as writing a novel unless, you know, you're that awesome. So, and I'm working on it. So.
Yeah, well, I think, who was it? There was someone I was reading about where it's just, you know, that takes them months to write, you know, a 200-page book because, like you're saying, it's not, you have to describe visually to the reader what is happening because they can't see it, you know, and they need, that's what you want to bring the reader into your world by describing what's the surrounding like, what the characters look like. Where if a comic book or a screenplay, it's already kind of a given. The artist will take care of that or the actors. So
yeah.
That's really interesting. Now, let's talk about actual Clutch, a novel of the Wrecked Earth. What is this book about?
Well, there's the world, and then there's the character, and Clutch is the name of the book, and it's also the name of the main character. So the world, the setting, it's a post-apocalyptic setting, although you might just consider it an apocalyptic setting, because the event that caused the world to sort of go back into a dark ages was a insanely large and long meteor storm that rained hell down on the earth. And
it's kind of like if in Armageddon they didn't quite, Bruce Willis didn't blow up the meteor.
Yeah, although not, I guess, an extinction-level event, but pretty close, because it didn't wipe out all life, but it wiped out a lot of it. And, of course, it took out civilization. Power grids and governments and everything were just brought to their knees. And
is that where the description of maybe like a Mad Max type of book comes into play?
Yes, because this is actually 20 years into the future. So the meteors, the main event that took everything down was called Rockfall, and that lasted for a couple of months. And the meteor showers have slowed down, but it's still a daily occurrence. You still see shooting stars in the sky constantly, day or night. And getting caught out is a way of it's almost like a curse. Saying someone you wish they get caught out means they get caught in a meteor shower, because it's pretty much a death sentence. So that's a real possibility when you're out there adventuring from one island of humanity to the other, is you got to watch out for the meteor showers in addition to the mutant hordes of monsters and other things that are out there.
So it's not like if you survive the one event, you're fine. That's still kind of randomly going on. You just don't know.
Exactly.
That's
exactly.
Interesting.
Thank you.
So then who's Clutch then?
So Clutch is, he had an interesting childhood. He grew up as part of a motorcycle club called the Tribe. His father and mother were part of this, and so he already had an unusual childhood and was sort of prepared for the whole concept of living off the road when Rockfall came along. And so he was around 8 years old when it happened. And so,
which I can't imagine being raised in a wasteland where every time you step outside you might die from falling rocks in your head. That's gonna shape you.
Now what it was interesting, because one of the things that happened with the Tribe was that they sort of were, as a group, more adaptable than your average citizen. So they actually ended up being sort of a force for good in terms of they could get places to help people where, you know, government vehicles couldn't or what have you. So they actually sort of became semi-legendary, at least in this area, for being helpful. But then something happened where they were wiped out, and Clutch was the sole survivor. And he was still young at the time, and so he's grown up in the interim until the point of the story, basically becoming a badass survivor.
Yeah, yeah. So is that kind of where the Conan thing comes into play, or?
Yes, yeah. He's a huge guy who knows how to fight, although that's not his... Unlike Conan, he wasn't, you know, trained in all these different martial arts and sword fighting. He just came by it naturally. And he's actually more of a mechanic than a fighter. He drives a converted 1971 Dodge Demon that's on a 4x4 chassis with these monster tires. And so in the name of the car is Sweetheart. It's stenciled aside.
Well, I noticed that if your Kickstarter gets, what is it, $105,000, that you will actually build a real replica of Clutch's car. Is that correct?
Yeah, I will do that. Yes, I think I'm pretty safe in saying that, but I will do it if it happens.
So, do you have experience building cars yourself, or
zero experience?
Well, why not learn? Build a big, huge Dodge Demon with huge tires, which I'm now seeing has a turbo V8 with nitrous oxide system. Wow.
Yes. Yes.
Hey, you know what? Yeah, go big or go home. Go big or go home. That's
exactly.
The rule. That's great. So then, what inspired this book? What inspired Clutch?
Well, kind of back to the comic connection again. So the artist who is doing the cover is Danny Cruz, and this guy is phenomenal.
Oh,
and,
the artwork that at least is on your Kickstarter site is just it's stunning. It is so good. It's all black and white, but it's just it's beautiful.
What happened was, do you remember Zuda, the DC online comics thing?
No, I don't.
Okay, it was it ended about I guess a year and a half ago or so. They had an online comics arm, and anyone could pitch stories. And then if you were selected, you had an 8-page comic, and it was a competition. And if you won, then you basically were hired by Zuda / DC to continue the story. And so I went looking for artists because I really wanted to do that. And I did get one entry in, a Jekyll and Hyde-based story called Hidebound. But I connected with Danny this way. I found his art on DeviantArt, and so we connected. And we tried to make a couple of things happen, but life kept getting in the way. And eventually I said to him, you pitch me something that you want to do that is really perfect with your style that you're really excited about. And so he had this idea for a character, and we went to work on it together, and eventually it became Clutch. And I had the story laid out, and he had a few pages roughed out, but again, life got in the way. So, but the story stuck with me. I put a lot of work into building the world of Clutch, and I couldn't help it. After a while, I just decided I had to get the story out there somehow, so I wrote the novel. And it will be the beginning of a series of stories. So this is just the first one. There's going to be additional novels, as well as short stories and novellas, and hopefully a comic with Danny, if things go well with Kickstarter.
I saw that. I said if you get to reach a certain limit, that it was a 12,000, you'll do an online comic?
Yes, absolutely.
Which, if he is drawing the art that needs to happen, it is yeah. so, it's just gritty and it's great. And
I am its biggest fan. It is, he's phenomenal.
Yeah, it is beautiful. So then you've been working on this project for the last, what, year and a half then?
Well, yeah, it's been a couple of years from the inception of Clutch. And then it kind of, you know, fell by the wayside when I worked on other things. But as far as the novel, I've been gangbusters on that for about 6 months.
Wow. Wow. And so how long is this novel going to be?
It's around, it's going to clock in somewhere between 50 and 60,000 words. And, in addition, I'm going to write, two short stories. One's going to come bundled with the novel that anyone at any time when they buy it, they'll get. And these short stories are both going to be set in the wrecked earth. But there's also going to be a Kickstarter exclusive short story that, if the, project is funded, only those people that backed Kickstarter will have the short story in the novel.
Really?
Yeah.
So are these short stories, are they of Clutch, or they have other characters in this world? Or, I mean, who are they, what's it entailing, the short stories?
Well, some of them will have Clutch in his younger days, sort of like his younger travels. So there'll be some insights. Yeah, there'll be insights into what made him who he is in the novel. And then others, there's a group of the tribe that sort of mutinied right before the world went to hell and took off. And so some of the short stories are going to be dealing with sort of them coming to their fate in this wrecked earth.
So they're basically cool supplements to the main novel of Clutch.
Absolutely, yeah. They'll either directly supplement it, or I have some plans for other stories down the road that'll just be a really great atmosphere. But yeah, in one way or another, they'll all tie in with Clutch, either directly or through the sort of meta plot of the series.
So this is a really big world that you're creating here.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's great. Now, so one last question. Actually, I have two more questions, but this one's the more important of the two. In your mind, what makes Clutch a novel director special, and why should people get behind your project?
Excellent question. The different elements of the story, you know, they always say that there's no new ideas. And I'm okay with that in terms of, because that's not, we do go looking for new ideas in stories, or at least things that are new to us. However you break it down, you could say, well, that's just a variation on, you know, this kind of journey or that kind of tale. But really what sells us as audience members or readers or fans of a comic is how a story is told, how it's delivered.
It's all about the writing.
Yeah. Yeah. It's the writing and the delivery. And I think I have something that is exciting and compelling. And I know it's going to be fun. It's been huge fun for me developing it. So I think that if you readers out there, if you're a fan of any one of these elements, post-apocalyptic stories, meteors, Conan, Mad Max, Lone Wolf and Cub, big giant cars and fighting monsters, then I think
V8 engines.
Yeah. Yeah, I think you'll find something fun in here.
This is my thing, is I haven't found that many settings in post, you know, apocalyptic, I don't know, type atmospheres that aren't enjoyable, because there's always that, either call it irrational or whatever it is, but there's always that, what if I wake up tomorrow and the whole world just changes, you know?
Yeah,
and
yeah.
I don't care who you are, there's always that, like, how would I survive?
Yeah.
Would I be, like, Clutch, or would I be some random person that just, I know me personally, I would be screwed. Like, yeah. If they're a zombie apocalypse, you know, I'm the one that people are just like pushing out of the way. It's like, he's a goner, just get rid of him, he can't add to our team, you know. And so that stuff always intrigues me. Like, I love those type of atmospheres. And I mean, Waterworld, you know, well, that doesn't count, but
right,
you know, but I to me, though, just fascinating, because I always put myself in the shoes of how in the world would I survive, and could I survive? And I think the premise is really, really fascinating and really interesting. And as I said, you just need to look at Clutch, the artwork that's on the Kickstarter. And I'll only just describe him. He's this big, burly, strong guy, long hair, and he has a huge battle axe, which I'm guessing he uses against those big giant mutant monsters.
Yeah, absolutely.
So who doesn't love that, you know? Well, one last question, and I said it's not the most important one compared to why we should get behind your project, but this is a comic book podcast. So the question to you, Chris, is who is your favorite superhero?
Very important question. And I'm going to be annoying and give you two answers.
Hey, you can give us two. It's okay.
Okay. Starting off, Spider-Man. And he was, my first comic I read reading over my older brother's shoulder was Spider-Man, because that was his favorite. And so I absolutely fell in love with the character and all the problems that Peter Parker had and how real a character he was.
Exactly. So relatable.
Yeah. And then the second, even though I'm tempted to say Batman, because of course it's Batman.
It's Batman. But he's my personal favorite. Don't lie. But
my other favorite would be Captain America. And
really?
Yeah. Almost for the opposite side of the coin for Spider-Man, because of the symbol of heroism that he represents.
He is so good. I mean, just as a person, Brayden, the other panelist for Between the Bubbles, his favorite male superhero is Captain America, just because like what you're saying.
Yeah.
He is amazing. It's Captain Steve Rogers, and especially in the Avengers. Oh, my.
Yeah. Yeah, he was fantastic. And, you know, the movie, the Captain America movie, every time I see it, the scene where he's running through the streets chasing the Hydra guy and, you know, and the kid gets tossed in the river and he's like, it's all right, go get him, I can swim.
Yep.
It was just, I love that. It always moves me every time I see it.
Yeah, well, and the thing I loved as well is even though it would have been easy to just try and land the plane at the end, he knew that if this stays intact, then it could get in the wrong person's hand, or something might happen trying to save himself, but he did the hard but the right thing of crashing that plane.
That's right.
Captain America. I actually have a t-shirt of Captain America. Because he's amazing. So,
awesome.
Anyway, Chris, thank you so much. Good luck on your project. Real quick, actually, what can people type in when they go to Kickstarter.com and do the search? What can they type in to find your project?
They can just type in Clutch. A couple of projects will pop up, but mine's the only one that's got the giant bruiser with the axe.
Yeah, you'll recognize it for sure.
Sure.
You'll definitely recognize it. Well, Chris, good luck. As I was saying, it sounds like a top quality project. And this is the great thing as well, as tell you listeners out there, is this is not Chris's first time writing. He's done screenplays. He's done other comic books. And so you have experience there behind the novel. It's not just someone saying, oh, I want to write a book, and then they've never done it before. So there's quality there. And, hey, we wish you the best. And
thank you.
Yeah, have a great time, and hopefully you reach your goal. We're really cheering for you, so, and we'll do our part to spread the word.
I really appreciate it. It was great talking with you.
Hey, great talking to you too, Chris. Take care.
Bye-bye.
Okay, today I am interviewing Devin. Devin, right?
Yep, you got it.
All right, perfect. I was pretty sure that was it, but you know, it never hurts to be certain. And Devin has a Kickstarter project as well. What's the name of your Kickstarter project, Devin?
It's Destiny's Fate.
Destiny's Fate. Very cool. We're going to talk a lot about what it is and what your plan is for it. But first, we want to get to know you a little bit. So where are you from originally, Devin?
I'm from northern New Jersey, about an hour outside of New York.
Very cool. That's exactly where my wife is from, a little further down the interstate from, I think, where you are. But again, 45 minutes an hour from from New York City, which is a lot of fun, right?
It really is. You can go in and out all the time.
Yeah. Thank goodness for that train system. You just pop the train and there you are in the city.
Yep. When I did my internship, I actually used the train.
Yeah. Where did you intern?
DC Comics.
Really? That's really cool. What did you do while you interned for them?
I was part of the advertising and custom publishing department, so I actually kept their library stock. I got all the free comics I wanted.
Oh my gosh. I'm so jealous.
Oh, you know, to be honest with you, I think I took advantage of all, like, 82 books they normally print, and I took them all. It was so much fun.
Hey, I would have as well.
Yeah. So, and I also got all, like, the graphic novels that were out and everything. But I pretty much did a lot of clerical stuff. I helped the department out by, you know, sometimes I did this market share report with, like, Excel. And, but mainly it was just, keeping up with the library and packing media kits and working with whatever they wanted me to do with that day.
Yeah, that's what happens when you're the intern. You just get whatever they need done, right?
Yep. And I think my highlight was every Wednesday, I got to watch the editors go inside like their meeting room. The nice one is on the third floor, which is where my desk was. So I got to watch them.
That's cool. That's a unique experience. I think that most of our listeners would be extremely jealous of that opportunity.
Yeah, it was really cool. That was back when Denise Schaefer was part of them. Mike Martz was already there. Dan DeVito. I think that was after Scott Peterson, though. Patterson. But it was really just... And Adam Schlagman. I actually handed him a paper once.
That's cool. So how long did you intern with them?
Only 3 months. But I was offered back to come for the spring semester, but I was graduating that semester and I couldn't move my classes. I sort of regret it today.
But you know, you got to do what you got to do when you're going to graduate.
Yeah, exactly. And a lot of people, when I say that, they're like, oh yeah, exactly what you said. Graduation's really important. But I have a travel contract now, so I don't know.
Yeah, that's how it works. So what made you want to get into comics, Devin?
To be honest with you, my grandfather used to watch Batman, the 1960s show. And so I watched that with him, and then that led to the Batman, the animated series, and X-Men. And I actually brought my first comic at Sam Goody's, which was Batman and Robin, The Adventures of Batman and Robin 1. So,
wow.
Yeah.
Thank you, Sam Goody's.
Yeah, exactly. Before they went out.
Yeah, no, too bad you're not around anymore. You gave Devin this one great opportunity, and now you're gone. But, hey, at least you got yours, right?
Exactly, right?
So you got in through Batman, but who are some of your favorite comic book characters? Are you still a big Batman fan, or are there other people who caught your eye?
I'm a huge Batman fan, but I do love the Winter Soldier over in Marvel.
Oh, my word. It's so good right now, right?
I actually do not collect the comic now. I'm so sad. But I love, you know, the Omnibus, if you buy any of those from, like, you know, Captain America right when he first started.
Oh, yeah.
It's amazing stuff. And I really want to, but, you know, when you're putting out a comic, it's so hard to buy. You have to pick and choose. And I literally, if I get 2 comics a month, it's huge. It's just so sad. I used to actually, before the DCNU, I used to pick up a fourth of DC's output I used to pay for.
Yeah. We do about the same here at the podcast simply because we want to review as much as we can. So we pick up an embarrassing amount. So we feel your pain.
Yep. And then when I started, the DCNU came around, I did a little bit less and I did more Marvel, actually. I got into, at the time, Avengers a lot. That was with the new Avengers and mm-hmm. Bucky Barnes was part of them. And sadly enough, then when I started my comic, it just all went, you know.
Well, you know, like you said, all the discretionary funds just disappear.
It is.
Well, for what it's worth, if you do get a chance to read the current running Winter Soldier, it's phenomenal. Brubaker is just knocking out of the park every month.
Yes, and I hear he's leaving.
No, he'll still be on Winter Soldier. He's leaving Cap, but he's staying on Winter Soldier.
Okay, good. All right.
Because he's decided he wants to do creator books, and he feels like that's a creator book because he's the one who brought Bucky back.
Oh, good. Oh, excellent.
So I don't care what mental gymnastics it takes him to still make that book for me, as long as it happens.
I agree with you. Absolutely. I will definitely pick that one up now.
It's definitely worth picking up. So you love Winter Soldier, Batman. Anyone else you are just a big, big fan of?
I like The Flash, but that was Wally, so sad enough.
So you were a Wally West girl, huh?
I was from the 1980s, so when I was born, you know, Wally was... No, the man by then, or well, a little bit after. 86. Yeah,
and Bart was dead when we were kids. You know, I'm from that same time period.
Yes, and Bart, and you know, now he's not even around, really.
Yeah, it's a shame. I understand. There's a lot of good things about the DCNU, but you know, no Cassandra Cain, no Stephanie Brown, no Wally West. It's kind of a shame.
It really is. And, you know, I'm happy Kyle's still around, Kyle Rayner, but, you know, I loved, you know, that was my generation.
And
our generation, actually, that just got wiped out.
Yeah, it's a shame. But, oh, well, that's comic books for you, right?
Yep, exactly. Gotta go with the flow.
So, you're working on a project of your own, Destiny's Fate. What is Destiny's Fate all about?
Destiny's Fate is really about Keona Ryder, who is the personification of Destiny. He bears this role, and he has to go home after 7 years' absence and essentially kill the defenders of time, which are his parents. So.
Ooh, that's an intriguing story. So we've got some patricide going on, or at least attempted patricide going on.
Yeah. And, you know, the main thing the story is about is really free will versus, you know, fate. What do, you know, do we have any choices in our life, or do we really have this path that's been already created for us and there's really no turning back from it? And Destiny is really, I kind of split it up here, that Destiny is a future that's achieved and fate is this preordained future that you have no choice but to do. And so he's actually this bearer of Destiny that he thinks that he can change it, but he's not so sure, and it makes it very hard, especially since in the beginning he really kind of wants to kill his parents.
Wow, that's a really, like, those are heady concepts for a comic book. I'm really impressed. You know, a lot of times that's what draws me into a comic more than anything else. The art can be great, but if the writing's not interesting and the concept's not interesting, I'm not going to pick up the book. But that sounds like a really cool idea, you know, that struggle between free will and destiny and all those kinds of things. So that sounds really, really fun.
Thanks. I hope it is.
It certainly looks great. I've looked at the Kickstarter page and looked at the preview pages that you have, and it's just phenomenal to look at.
Well, I'm glad, because Mal works really hard. Mal Vargas is my artist, and he goes through, like, stages. He'll actually, like, send me, you know, about a chunk of 8 pages that are just, you know, scratches that, you know, sketches that tell me, you know, this is what I'm thinking. We'll go through them, and then he'll send me the whole, you know, then a batch of 8 that are done that then go to Rodrigo, who is our Rodrigo Tobias is our colorist, who actually comes from, you know, Mexican comics, and he's just fantastic with adding to it.
And that's really cool.
It's really cool, and, you know, we have Taylor Esposito, who sadly enough was part of the Marvel cut back in October of last year.
Oh, and yeah.
That is just amazing. I mean, he will have, Mal, the way that our production works is Mal will finish a page, put it up on our Dropbox, and then Taylor actually sets it up for production before it hits our colorist. And Taylor will have it done, you know, within, you know, half an hour so that Rodrigo can grab it and do it when he can. It's really amazing how...
That's quick lettering. I'm impressed.
Yeah, I mean, the guy rocks. I mean, all mine. Clearly. All the team is, like, really professional. I couldn't have asked for a better team with us. It's amazing.
That's really cool. So how long have you been working with these guys?
I've been working with for about a year. I used to do these, like, scripts on my webpage that I would get him to just do a cover for because I wanted to show people what I could do. And, you know, it didn't really get much press or anything because they were just scripts on a page. But
yeah.
He, you know, I would pay him to do a cover. And he would color it and do everything, draw it. And it was really, they really added something. And we got down to a kind of a science of how we do stuff. And then, my boss actually works for IC Geek, which is this small little publishing company out in Iowa, but they're really cool. They work with big names like, I always pronounce his name wrong, but it's Brian Buccello. He's the writer of The Flash.
Mm-hmm.
We print his stuff, for Foster a lot of times. It's really cool. We work with a few people here and there. We're also, I think, almost going to get Manga Magazine, I think we're going to print for. But I pretty much write press releases. And Noel asked me back in, I think it was October, why aren't you writing a comic? And I said, I don't know. You know, I never really thought about actually doing one myself. And so I had this book idea that I wrote back in college because I was a writing major. And so I started, you know, writing a script, and I couldn't think of anybody else but Mal to do it because we were, you know, at the time still working. And he signed on, and Taylor, we actually met online in January, and he was like, hey, you know, on Twitter, and he's like, hey, I see you guys have a book, do you need lettering? And I was like, yeah, absolutely, you know, and his credentials were awesome, and then Mal actually knows Rodrigo, and they work together at this company, Graphic Leaf, So it just kind of came together almost like kismet. And it took a little while to get our flow down, but once we did, it honestly, it's just awesome.
That's really exciting. It sounds like, you know, the stars aligned and everybody got where they needed to be so this project could happen.
Yeah, and we got a little bit pushed back because of, like, Comic-Con in San Diego. We were actually supposed to be out originally in July, but once we did that, it actually gave us an extra month to really make sure that everything was how we needed it. And then we're actually working ahead. We are almost done with issue 2 now, which should be done by at least the first week of September, so that you know, it'll be ready for distribution in September for the digital for the people who do Kickstarter and October for mainstream. So
very cool. So this isn't one where, like, if people fund you now, they'll get their book in 2 years or something like that.
Exactly. The only thing that I feel really bad about is we actually have on our Kickstarter page the whole entire series you can buy for, I think it's $55 with a shirt and stuff like that. But they don't get all their books until, I want to say, May of next year. Just to be on the safe side, I said May. But they all get digital copies, you know, as they come out.
So if you do back the whole series, then you'll get the digital as they come out, but when it's all said and done, you'll get all 7 issues in one lump sum?
Yep.
Very cool. Because it's 7 issues, correct?
Yeah.
That's pretty exciting. So you're almost done with issue 2, 5 more issues, and you'll have it in the bag.
Yep. It seems so easy, but it sounds easy, but it's really not.
Well, it takes a lot longer than you'd think. So who is it that you're publishing through again?
We're publishing through IC Geek. It's Iowa City Geek. It's a small little publisher that Noel actually started out of his own. I think he works at a copy center / publishing firm, and so he started out of there. So.
For Iowa City, that's where I live. I'm from Iowa City.
Really?
The world is a very small place.
It very much is.
I thought when I heard IC Geeks, I was like, I'm pretty sure I've heard that around town, and that would be why.
Yeah. Yep, there's actually two. There's the publisher, and then there's also a group of writers, I believe, that are called IC Geeks as well. So, you know, it's pretty cool how they all kind of work together.
Yeah, that's really exciting. You know, it's good to find at least a lot of times I feel like, especially for a project like this, it's good to find a small press like that where you can get it out and you can get it done instead of being, like, stuck in editorial hell for months or years or however long it takes.
Yeah, and to be honest with you, I'm really grateful because I have I have two editors for me, Linda and my other friend Aaron, who actually I will send them a script and they'll tell me honestly how it sounds. So it's really great that I'm able to do editors also outside of the company, as well as, you know, if Noel doesn't like something, he'll let me know.
Yeah, that's. I figure the more constructive input you can get like that, the better.
Oh, absolutely. I think the best thing I heard from this so far was, wow, it's kind of bloody. I was like, that's the point.
Like, you do realize there's supposed to be violence in this book, right?
Yeah, exactly. So I was like, yeah, woohoo!
Well, like I say, it's gorgeous to look at. The pages that have the script on them are really engaging. I feel like the dialogue is really natural. It seems realistic. It doesn't have that kind of stilted dialogue that you sometimes get from comics. So I'm really excited about this project. I definitely, as soon as my paycheck comes through, now that dumb school has started again and I have a paycheck, I will be backing this project. It's a great looking project and definitely worth looking at.
Thank you. I really appreciate that.
And, you know, it was great to talk to you today. A lot of the people who we talked to seem to be men, because it seems like comic books seems to be a field that's dominated by men. But it's important, I think, to have voices of everybody. And so I'm glad that you're out there and you're writing this.
Oh, thanks. I really appreciate it. I agree. But, you know, it's really awesome when you get to talk to all different types of people who work in comics. It really is a great medium for that too, you know?
It really is. I mean, just look at just on your project, you're working internationally. You've got people from other countries working with you. You somehow can, and that's one of the beautiful things about the internet, you know? You can be in New Jersey, they can be in Mexico, you can have your letter wherever he is, and everyone can get it done whenever they can from wherever they are.
Yeah, to be honest with you, it really worked out great. Taylor's actually from New Jersey as well, so.
Oh, very nice.
We have 2 in Mexico and 2 in New Jersey, so that's really, it makes it easier. But yeah, it's a lot of fun to be able to go back and forth, and also going through the language barrier, I'm really glad that Mal and Rodrigo both speak English.
That's definitely a blessing.
Yes, absolutely.
Well, you know, thanks a lot for talking with us today. Again, the project is called Destiny's Fate. If you search for Destiny's Fate on Kickstarter, you can easily find it. By the time we get this published, you'll have a little over 2 weeks left. And I really hope that, you know, people go out and they listen to this podcast and they support it, because it looks like an awesome project. Very, very worth some support.
Thank you very much. I really appreciate that.
So if you had one thing to say to our listeners about your project, how would you sell them on backing you?
Oh, wow. I would say that it's a project that is, the art is amazing, and, which you've already said, and the thing is that it's really professional, that you will get a book every 2 months. It's not going to be something where, you know, it will go for time, you know, 3 or 4. Nope, we're on schedule, and it should work out really well that way.
Perfect. Well, that sounds really, really great. I'm excited for you. I really hope you get the funding. And listeners, I hope you've enjoyed my talk with Devin this afternoon. It's a really exciting project, and I hope you all back it. And happy reading. Hey, Between the Bubbles is a production of Almost Midnight Media and is released under a Creative Commons license. Yep, that's it.